Welcome back to the show. There's no telling where we'll go. So come and share a laugh on the Imp and Skiz podcast.
We're back for part two with Scott back in the studio here.
I'm still here. Yeah. You can't get rid of me just yet.
No. I had such a great time connecting with you in the first one. And we have more to dive into. I think you want to talk a little bit. We want to dive a little bit more into empires.
Yeah.
And then you know this. I like learning about people, and I really like learning about who people were. So I'm going to want to learn a little bit more about young Scott later. I don't know how long you were in Scotland, but we're going to unpack that. So let's get back into the Minecraft world.
Yeah, let's finish this one off because Empires is a different vibe of a SMP from a lot of the SMPs that are out there. Mm-hmm. And the fact that there's a lot of more role playing going on. And we had a chance to have a little, we called it like a rift, right?
Yeah.
Where we combined Hermitcraft people and Empire people, and we came onto your server for a while, and then you guys came on our server for a while. It was like just this really cool opportunity to get to know more people and see the difference in kind of like play styles between two different SMPs. But what you guys were kind of heavy on was like more of the lore, more of the role playing and things like that. And I just wanted to get your take on that, like as a content creator, is that something that you like really enjoy playing roles of other things and getting into lore and things?
Kind of. I think like Empire Season 1 was such a funny one because like originally was like, in its early stages, it was a series I think was literally just Joel, Fwip, Catherine, and I think Sausage. Like they were just going to do this like kingdom thing where they built their own kingdoms, and then it kind of turned into like, oh, what if we got everyone in? And it sort of was like, okay, everyone's going to have their own like empire, and we're going to have conflicts where we like want to fight each other and have issues with each other. And the whole bit that we're like, okay, the other thing is each person will have like a resource they trade. So like Season 1, I was like, I'll do wool mainly because it's the one farm I know how to set up functionally well. So I'll do wool, me, I'll take that one. And it was good because it then meant like, oh, if I need gunpowder from, say, Fwip, I'd be like, I'll trade you wool, or you give me gunpowder now. If you need extra things, like I'll do it down the line. And the early episodes of Empires, there wasn't really roleplay. It was as much like as what you're doing with Hermitcraft of building like a cyberpunk city was like, I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to do elven architecture. So I already played a lot of World of Warcraft. I was like, cool. It was a lot of like Pinterest boarding and putting elven tower and just scrolling and pinning ones. Like it was a lot of that. And it was more just like, I shoved on a skin to give myself elf ears and was like, cool, this is my theme. It was a theme more than anything else. And it was funny. It literally, the roleplay stuff only really started from the Zornoth thing I was telling you about, where like I tried to mess with Shelby and I was like, hey, can I get another account with this? And like the audience just started rolling with it. And like I then got like a demonic voice changer just to try and mask the accent. Didn't work. to the point where like I ended up, it was like, right, I need a lore reason for why this demon sounds like me. And I was like, we were brothers and we didn't know. Like I ended up just like convoluting this thing to like make it make sense as to why it sounds like me. And it ended up, it was a lot of fun because I love Disney. I love Drag Race. And I love like a good villain. Like, you know, like a really good campy villain kind of thing. Those are the best. And the one thing I learned though with Minecraft and like the space is like, it's really hard to play a villain because there's so many of the audience that don't understand that it's like, we're all still friends. Like they think it's all serious. So when you decide to be the bad guy, if you go for someone that's bigger than you, you just get like ripped into because everyone's like, leave them alone, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, we're friends. Like I'd seen so many people like with life series think me and Joel don't like each other because Joel's like vendetta he plays up. Like, no, we're friends. Like, it's fine. And Zornoth was the first time that like, it was like, oh, I can play this villain. And the people who are not clued in enough to know that we're all friends and it's role play weren't clued in enough to know that it was me with a voice changer. So like, it was quite handy of like, it sort of opened an avenue of like, I could be a villain and it never came back to bite me with that. And I think it then turned into a thing where we all sort of realized like, oh, we can play more with this. Like this wasn't an avenue we actually expected to play in, but we can because the audience are really receptive to it. And a lot of it was like, I remember we would all like be sharing fan art of things, or you would see like cool storylines of people come up with stuff on like Tumblr. Like I know for Fwip Sausage and Gem, they became like this little like Wither Rose Alliance kind of thing. It was just because they ended up wanting to hang out and record more. And then like the audience gave it a name and suddenly it just stuck. So many of my like Empires 1 was like, oh, like, I had read Tumblr, I was like, that's a cool idea, sure, that's what I meant, like, bring it, like, I'll write it into the video, like, and I think it was a really interesting thing, because none of us had really, like, tiptoed around roleplay. I think roleplay in Minecraft used to be, like, it was a big thing way back in the day, like, it used to be, like, the machinimas and all this, and then it became, like, really cringe, and then I think, like, other servers started playing with that, like, improvised roleplay and lore, similar to honestly what we do with Life series. It's like improv roleplay with stuff. And Empires kind of like took off, and I think like we hit this niche that we didn't know, and like Lizzie and me did a musical number, and then Lizzie turned it into an entire musical. Like, there's a whole album of just musical numbers to do with the series and this sort of thing.
Wow.
And I think we sort of ended up like falling into our own trap of like what was a pro in season one ended up becoming a con in season two, which is a shame, because it's like, I think if you'd all, if we'd done the collab thing like early season one or something, like, you'd have been like, this is just like us. And by the time you came, what ended up happening with season two was like, we all got so excited about how receptive the audience were, and we almost treated it like D&D. Like, that was kind of what our, we all are a bunch of nerds, most of us play D&D, so we're like, cool, I get to make like a D&D character and play it in Minecraft. And we all kind of went into season two too planned. Like, we, I already kind of knew like different, I'd written out in like a flight like different story points I would like to hit, or like do little arcs with this sort of thing. And it ended up meaning that like to tell all those stories I wanted to tell, I didn't have a lot of space for improv and spontaneity. And it then meant that like you interacted with people less in season two. And I think like that was what the rift was meant to be, kind of a bring it all together. But you kind of went from like, there was different levels even within Empires of like, Joel didn't do pretty much any role. Like, he had like, oh, I'm a god, blah, blah, blah. And like, he was always like very tongue-in-cheek lore. Mm. Like, it was almost kind of making fun of lore. And then, like...
So Joel. That is so Joel.
When I did the whole demon story in season one, Joel's whole thing was that he just would ignore it. Like, if I was messing with him in creative mode, like, teleporting him places, he'd be like, oh, that's weird, some weird lag. Or, like, people in chat would be like, it's Zarnoth, it's a demon. He'd be like, what demon? Like, well, looking right at me. Like, he just pretended he couldn't see it. That was how he handled it in season one. So then with season two, like, we ended up having, like, varying levels of, like, Sausage, who's very into, like, lore and planning things out and connecting them all with a multiverse thing. Like, to the point where, like, now when we do new series, we have to go to them, we're like, Sausage, this one cannot be connected. You're not allowed to connect them. No lore. Like, stop. And it meant, obviously, when you all came in, where you're just people playing Minecraft, and yeah, you have themes and inspo similar to what we did in season one, but season two, we were, like, playing characters, and I think it led to this weird, like, you had people like Cleo, and I think, who was Cleo, and I think Joe picked up, like, the pirate thing that Joey was doing, and, like, just joined in, and that was fine, but I think a lot of it then, it was, like, you didn't know where to go, and I think also because people had storylines that they wanted to tell, it was, like, how do I involve new people into this, and, like, it all just sort of didn't mesh as well as it should have. Like, I think we all look at like Life series and we're like, oh, we mesh so well there that we thought it would do it as well. And I just think also the thing I loved about when we came onto your server for the week was like, you all have so many like mini games and things to do. Like, there was False's Elytra course and the water bucket game and all this sort of stuff. So when you end up spending more time with ours, it was like, we don't have any of that. Like, we're all kind of doing lore building. Like, I think it would have ran so much smoother if we'd swapped it, where like we were at you for a lot longer and you were at us for a little bit to build. And I think like we learned a lot. It's like now with like we're doing Minecraft SOS, which is like a hardcore kind of series. If you die, you can get revived and this sort of thing. But like we very, like at the start, it was like, there is no lore in this series. Like, you're not allowed to do lore. Like, you can do a theme. You can like have a skin and be like, oh, my, like, one of the people on it, like, Owen is doing like a jungle thing. So he lives in the jungle. He's got like kind of like a caveman-y style like skin on. But it's just like, that's about where it ends. He builds with like bones and this sort of stuff. Like, it's more adding like what you did with your Cyberpunk thing. You've got like the ramen shop and the music shop. It's like you're adding life to an area, but not like lore or that sort of thing to it. And I think it was something we all kind of came away with where we were like, almost season one and two had to happen the way they did for us to learn stuff from it. Like, I think that's always my goal, is like, even if you mess up with something or something doesn't go as good as you want it to, like, what's the lesson you can take away from that? And for us, it was, okay, if we did a season three of Empires, we need to like not go into it as lore focused at the start. Like, we need to go into it again of sort of like, you can have a theme that you want to do for your builds and maybe a skin. But like, that's a bit. Like, try and limit yourself of like thinking too far ahead, because you stop letting yourself have those spontaneous moments, which always end up being the best ones.
Yeah, I think there's room for like when you're getting into this space, is like, it's okay to like have a backstory to mm-hmm. like give purpose to what you're building. I think purpose driven building is very helpful to attach emotions to what you're doing. But when you're having to like I dropped into Lizzie's area and there's all these animals walking around on two legs and things are just weird. It almost felt like I dropped. I was in a fever dream. You know what I mean? All of a sudden,
To be fair, that's just Lizzie. Yeah. Lizzie's stuff is just always a fever dream. It doesn't matter what CDs you're on.
Then Flip comes up and he's like, a goblin, and wanted me to go steal gold from the king. And so like immediately it was like, oh, okay, this is much different.
I think you kind of dipped your toes into the roleplay stuff with the last season when you had like the Ren King stuff, like. Mm-hmm. That was it. Almost like that was the best season for you to come into after just doing your roleplay thing, because you kind of seen like, oh, this is what is even more of that kind of thing. And it was able to kind of be like, okay, we don't want to do more of that. Like, you kind of learn that's not where the type of content you like doing comes from. And I said, it's what we learned. We just had to be the ones to do it. But
yeah, well, that's good. I mean, with these kind of series like Empires, it's not. It feels like you guys do much shorter seasons, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I, in fact, I've seen a lot of the like SOS. Like, I don't know what the plan is there, but I can imagine it's not going to be like a 2-year project.
Oh, no, like, SOS is like a 8-week type, or it's like I think it's a 4-month was our goal. So it was like longer than a life series, but shorter than a usual SMP.
Yeah.
Because again, it was like what you were saying. Like, it's one of the things I've always admired with Hermitcraft, where it's like, I don't know how you can be playing the same world for like 2 years and be like, we're still doing things. And I'm like, where, how, why? Like, how are you still thinking of this stuff? Like, we all get a bit like fatigued, I think, with our group. Like, I think obviously Joel's a good example and Jem's a good example of like, even Peril, like they were all in Empires and then are in Hermitcraft, and like there's Joel's obviously, this is the first time doing something as long, but like they're obviously showing that you can do it that way. It's just, if it's not something you're used to doing. I think what ends up obviously happening with us in the past is like people end up getting a bit bored off it because they've done it for so long, and then they become less active, and then it suddenly feels like you're just playing single player, which isn't what any of us signed up for. And then eventually it's like, okay, this isn't working. And I think like for SOS specifically, we were like, we've always tried to kind of pick an end date when we pick a start date, so that we're like, this is the time that we're asking you as a person to commit to this server. Like, we're saying, because season one, I remember we were like, we're going to end, I think it was when like 1.20 or something came out. There was like a big update, or 1.19. And I remember at the time, like, that was what we said, we're going to end it. And it came to that time and we were like, it's actually going like better than we thought it would. Like, we're kind of in a high, it would feel weird to end right now. So we were like, let's extend it. But someone like Pix, it only like signed on for that first section, because he was like, oh, I'm doing my survival guide now, like I need to focus on that with a new update. So Pix kind of disappeared in the last end of Empires 1, which was totally fine because he'd committed the period that he'd said he would commit, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Because there's nothing worse, like I've had so many CDs, even just like Afterlife, which was the modded series we did before SOS, kind of ended up being a flop because the mod pack didn't work, which then put people off playing because it would crash and glitch, and it was just so many things with modded Minecraft. But it was like a learning experience of like, you need to be able to commit to the series you're doing for the time you're planning on doing it. And I think that's why we've always kind of gone in with an end goal, because you're then like, okay, I know how long I've got till this ends, so I know I've got this amount of time to sort of pace out what I'm wanting to do. I think if I was like doing a 2-year one, like I'd end up doing, it's like, I remember speaking about it with all of you with the life series thing, where I'd be like, you hermits ruined episodes 1 through 5. Like, you took everything we would do in the first 5 episodes and condensed it into 20 minutes. Like, maybe the first episode of like season 8, it was like, False was like, oh yes, we've beat the dragon. And I'm like, you've done what? I was like, we're on episode 1. What do you mean you have full enchanted gear? Like, I think, and it's been interesting for this season, because I've been watching so many of like your different POVs, like you two, Green, Scar, Joel, Gem, like Peril. everyone seems to be taking, even us for SOS, like we're taking this, like, oh, I'm slowing it down this series. Yeah. Like, I'm taking my time. I'm letting it breathe a bit more. And like, oh, we only beat the dragon like last week on SOS. Like, it had been shut before then. Like, we were just enjoying not having a light run, using paths and horses. Like, mm-hmm. I think a lot of it is like, oh, I'm not wanting to build these big automated farms because I'm robbing my, like, you're kind of, when you do all of that stuff too quickly, you're then left with only your imagination for content, and eventually that well runs dry.
Yeah.
So I think by pacing out a bit more, and obviously for SOS having an end date is like, okay, well, I can scale this to here, or like, I know I've got this amount of time to do this or that sort of thing, and it helps kind of like, at least for us, do that. I think doing an entire like 2-year series, it'd be something I'd be interested to see how I would do, but I think it would be like, okay, I need to sit down and think about this.
Yeah. There definitely is some planning that's that goes into seasons. Like, I always try to come up with a theme. Like season 8, I did like this Willy Wonka theme.
Yeah.
I try to dabble with some lore playing and that, and but that and then last season I was a dwarf, and this season we're doing the cyberpunk thing. So like I my plan is to actually give the cyberpunk city a backstory, something I've been working on, so that it will have that like connection. But you're right, like the having this slower pace has been really great, because one, you start to do things in Minecraft that you didn't do before, like ride horses.
Yes,
you
know, dude,
and now all of a sudden now you're paying more attention to what the ground looks like between your base and somebody else's base, and that gives you something that once you get a light, you're not going to think about, and that's content that would have been missed.
Yeah.
Do you feel like YouTube as a whole, like this is a bit of a paradigm shift that's happening on YouTube, to where YouTube started off being just this, anyone can point a camera at themselves, mm-hmm. record and upload unedited, and it's just this playground to share yourself, to this almost produced versions of content that get put on YouTube now, or you know, yeah, currently even, to where they're like hyper produced, and it's almost like competing with Netflix or with movies. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, oh, now I need sound engineers and all this stuff, and we go crazy with the hyper cuts and the time lapses and things like that. And now I'm starting to feel, at least personally, I'm starting to feel like there's almost like people are getting over that overproduced style, and they want to go back to the more relaxed, just to put yourself out there as you, not some produced version of your content. Do you see that yourself?
Yeah, it sort of was like the Mr. Beastification of YouTube, like that sort of thing of like, I think Jimmy kind of came in and was like, I've got this algorithm, I know how to make it work, and it did, and like, props to him, it did insane kind of thing. But when you do something to that extent and it does so well, you get people who want to replicate it. Like, I think there's always a big difference of, like, I always say there's a difference between creating content and being a content creator. As like, someone whose job like is to hit algorithms and that, they're creating content. Like, that's their job, they have to create content that hits it. Whereas if you're someone who like the audience is there for you and you as a personality, you're a content creator. Like, that's always where my brain, for me personally, split it as like, are you making it because people are wanting to watch you and be there for you and it's something you enjoy doing? Or are you doing it because you're trying to earn money and reach statistics and numbers? And both are equally valid. It's just obviously, I know I don't have the drive to do the one of them. Like, I'd rather miss a video than like upload something just to filler or to like try and play hitting an algorithm. Like, I obviously did very well during the Among Us times, but that was, I just enjoyed Among Us and it happened to do well. It wasn't me being like, Among Us is hot, I need to get on it kind of thing. And I think, like you were saying, yeah, it is sort of going back. I think like YouTube back in the day used to be people would upload like 30, 40 minutes unedited, just raw let's plays, where it's like, here's episode 147 with nothing.
Yeah.
And I always remember it was Lizzie at the time, was always, for me at least, like, was sort of the first YouTuber I seen that was sort of pioneering this like edited down version, where like she would record for like an hour and cut it down to 12 minutes and everything was fast paced, and she'd have like images pop up or sound effects or zoom ins. And I remember at the time, because it was like Lizzie and like Syndicate Project and all this sort of stuff, and it was like, oh, she's doing something different here. And it eventually turned into like, you couldn't do the first thing now, like you have to do the second. And I think part of that came from almost like when there was the pandemic and mainstream media wasn't producing content, like TV shows and movies were stopped. It meant everyone was like, okay, what other avenues do we have? And it was content creation with like YouTube stuff. And there was just so much to consume that everyone sort of was. And as time started, like this sort of went back to normal, it then became like, oh, I don't have time for that. But if you've got something like the Mr. Beast video where it's constantly jumping and your brain's like, if I'm with Mr. Beast, you either, like, for me, I can't watch it. Like, there's too much going on where my brain's like, huh? What's happening? But some people need that to keep them on. It's like that, the meme thing with, like, putting TikTok where you've got, like, Subway Surfers and then, like, the actual video kind of thing, because people need to be stimulated with two things. And I think...
God, I know exactly what he's talking about. Yeah. Do you know what he's talking about?
Yes.
It's a whole new medium now where I'm like, what is happening?
It's like
they're
combining two different videos in one, right? Yeah, I've seen it.
That it's because people are like, oh, each other. Right. Yeah.
It's always like Reddit, like, am I the asshole stories where they're like doing Minecraft parkour? And like, I sit and watch because visually my brain's like, cool, I'm watching this person do parkour. But then you're like listening to the story. Whereas I probably wouldn't sit and watch someone just reading out the story kind of thing. But yeah, it's been an interesting, like, doing it as long as I have, seeing, like, YouTube constantly change. It used to be back in the day, YouTube prioritized quantity over quality. So it used to be you had to upload daily, otherwise you wouldn't get anywhere. And it was always Mythical Morning, like the Brett and Link thing. They used to take their podcast and then cut it into, like, 20-minute segments and upload, like, each day or, like, multiple in one day, because that was what YouTube algorithm was promoting. And then it suddenly changed to like, now it want. Then there was a point where it was like long form videos it wanted. So it was, everyone was uploading 30, 40 minute videos. And then obviously now with shorts and things, it's now like they were pushing shorts and they wanted like clips and less than a minute. And it's just, you've got to kind of try and keep up and balance your content with like still doing stuff you like, but also doing stuff to like make you money so that you can afford your mortgage and your food and bills and such. But yeah, it's been an interesting like change.
And what's interesting is whenever these parameters expose themselves to us, whether it's going to be long form or short form, and in the most severe case, Vine, if you remember Vine back in the day, was 7 seconds. And what it does, in my opinion, is I've always been very impressed with the human. And it ends up pushing our ability to explore something new that we may have one day dismissed. And so you go back to Vine, which is, like we said, it's no longer a thing, but it was exactly 7 seconds. Like, you had who can tell a story in 7 seconds? And what happened was people not only found a way to tell a story in 7 seconds, people found a way to squeeze on that and exploit it in regards to, this works because it's 7 seconds. And if it was 8, it starts to break down. And I think the poster child of Vine was Thomas Sanders. I don't know if you ever watched Thomas Sanders, but...
Yeah, it was always like Thomas Sanders, Liza Koshy, David Dobrik. Like, they all started on Vine kind of thing.
Yes.
There's also so many... It's like you were saying, like, I still quote Vines to this day. Like, if I see a road work ahead sign, I'm like, yeah, I sure hope it does. Like, or Hurricane Katrina, more like Hurricane Tortilla. Like... Still quote these things as like an adult now. Like, Vine hasn't existed for so long. I'll still sometimes just shove on like Vine compilations on YouTube where it's like a 40-minute video of all the best ones combined. Like, it just had such a grip on like my generation and like any that older generation. Obviously, like, younger people won't. There's something that it's always the gauge of like, if I make a Vine reference and like people don't laugh, I'm like, you were too young for this, you didn't get it.
Because it was a kind of a blip on our radar. Like, it was hot, it was gone. And I remember like there was a specific Vine that Thomas Sanders did so many great ones, and there was a specific Vine where him and a buddy are running, keep in mind, 7 seconds, people. Him and a buddy are running through the forest away from some sort of creature that's chasing them. And one of them says to the other, in a very panicked voice, we got to run. And they're both singers, so they do a run in regards to what singers do. Ooh, like they do that whole thing.
Yeah.
And they both kind of celebrate the awesome run. And then the creature appears. They're like, but seriously, we got to run. And they run. So they took you on this like fun journey where there was panic. And then there was a joke. They enjoyed each other. Then there was panic. And they continued with their retreat. They did it in 7 seconds. The editing, the audio, the acting, everything was so perfect. I think that was the Vine where I was just like, I don't know how long this is going to last, but this has pushed the human to explore a different part of themselves that I would have never thought existed ever. The closest we would have ever gotten to it would have been when I was a kid and I would go into the comic section of the Sunday newspaper and I would read the 3 frames of Garfield, tell a whole story within 3 frames, like stuff like that. But we found a way to do it in this video form, and it was so like admirable to me that I found myself, could I tell a story in 7 seconds? I don't know if I have that skill set.
Yeah.
You know, but it's maybe, I don't know, maybe I should have given it a go.
I think Vine's one of those like prime examples of that, like you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. Of like, we all look back on Vine with such fond memories because it ended so kind of like not when we expected it to, and like it was just gone.
Yeah.
And like all the, like the platform was gone, the videos were gone, it was only if they were re-uploaded somewhere, like that sort of thing. And I think like TikTok's an example of like it, when it came in, it sort of was like more for dancing. And then I still use, like, I love TikTok. I scroll TikTok every night kind of thing. It's my little, oh, what am I doing? If I go to the bathroom, I'm on TikTok, like that sort of stuff. But it has had its own controversies and its own issues and ebbs and flows. And it definitely isn't as good as it like used to be. And I think it's kind of that example of like, oh, it's definitely like some platforms, the longer they stick around, the worse they get. Like YouTube and Twitch have changed so much and had some not great decisions when they've done it. And Vine sort of had that, like, it came, it succeeded, and then it dipped. Like, it was like, cool, and it's just left with fond memories. But it's interesting seeing the other platforms that change and tweak are that, and it sort of goes south kind of thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, you talk about TikTok and you hear this, people talk about popcorn brain, you know, like you're saying, well, I gotta watch two things at once, and I gotta get my dopamine hit and swipe and swipe. And I feel like because we've been doing this YouTube thing for a decade plus, like the viewers, a lot of my viewers anyway, have matured with me over that decade. And I think because of that, I actually feel like the majority of my viewers would prefer the longer, more laid back, less production heavy style from me than leaning into the, how can I give them the dopamine hit every 5 seconds, you know? And I just feel that just because, because, you know, if I was brand new, you know, I mean, look at like the Dream SMP, right? Young kids, obviously young audience. And so their stuff was going to need to be those quick hits. But, you know, for us who've been doing it for a decade and a lot of our viewers grew up with us, they don't seem to have that mentality as much. And I've seen a lot more appreciation for a more mature, laid back style in my content as well.
Yeah, I get a lot. Like, I remember at the time when it was like Tommy and Tubbo and all that kind of came into it. And I remember like streaming with them or doing stuff, and like their energy is like 100 the entire time. And I remember having like sort of like, oh my God, am I going to like not be able to do this? Because like, I can't do that. I can't be at that level all the time. I don't have the energy or the ADHD. I was like, I don't have either. I can't be up there. And I remember at the time sort of like thinking, oh God, what am I going to do? And I'm now at a point where like, so many people come into my streams and that, and they're like, oh, it's so chill in here. I was like, that's just the vibe I want. Like, I want to play Minecraft, I'll sing some songs, or I'll put on chill background music. I don't have times where I'm just sat singing musical numbers. Like, it's all very like chill, and that energy is like a lot lower down. I think a lot of people appreciate of like, there's so much going on in the world that's like chaos all the time. And it's sometimes having this like what people would call like a comfort streamer, of being able to go in and just watch this person and like sort of zone out from everything else and just focus on the silly guy playing Minecraft or a silly server with block people and them like running around, like it gives people a lot of a like, okay, I can chill, like this is my decompress like comfort zone kind of thing.
That's what it's very therapeutic. And it's I mean, you nailed something there. Is I don't know how deep we want to get on this, but you're right, the world is got a lot of turmoil going on. I think we're all aware of that. I also think that the world has absolutely always had a lot of turmoil going on. We're just so much more aware today.
Connected,
just because of this, everything travels so fast. I mean, the things that are happening across the world, you know, 100 years ago, we have no 200 years ago, have no idea. So, but now you can get it inside the rectangle on your phone real time. And what it does is it kind of exposes the mankind to this discomfort and this discontent that is all around us, and we end up seeking comfort. And I think that I find it when I put on Bob's Burgers or when I put on poker. I love to watch poker and stuff like that. I think that our audiences get the same stuff. I think they get the same stuff from us. And my stuff is more high energy, but I've done it like a Just Chatting stream before. And when I do a Just Chatting stream, it actually ends up being therapeutic for me. You know, because I can just lean into it. And just really, I can't read all. I don't know how you guys can read as much as you can during the scrolling chat. I try to, but when I'm playing a game, especially when I'm collabing, I have a hard time reading it. When I'm just chatting, I just stare and I just communicate with the words that are connected mm-hmm. to people. And it is ends up being therapeutic. So I think you, what I'm getting at is I think you nailed it. People come there for comfort. People want the something, and you're delivering what yeah. that something is. And to me, that gives me a lot of purpose. You know, it just does. Even my Twitter, my little one-liner above my Twitter says, bringing laughter, that is my purpose. Because it's like when I can narrow it down to something like that, I'd like to believe that there's more to me than that. But I would like to, when I bring it down to that, I'm like, that's what I'm supposed to do here. And by here, I mean the planet. I mean this little stint inside this vessel, you know, and here we are. We're very lucky to have this opportunity to do that. Not everybody mm-hmm. gets to experience this.
It's always so like rewarding when people come up and they're like, oh, I was going through a really hard time, but like your content really helped me get through that. Or for me, I get a lot of like people coming to terms with their own like sexuality or their gender expression and things where like watching you be so yourself and not it being this thing that you had to hide, like really helped. And I was like, that's the goal. Like if I can make one person each day feel happier with content that I've produced or doing or make them feel more comfortable, then like it's worth it. Like, I've done what I need to do, tick the box, like, great, I've done what I'm here to do. Like, there's so much misery in the world that, like, I think if we can add any little bit of joy, whether it's just being, playing a block game and people finding it funny, like, it's any element of that that can kind of be added is always a good thing.
Absolutely.
Because I think, like, what you were saying, if there's so much going on and so much you kind of get at the touch of your fingertips, but it also then comes with the kind of the negative side of like you're also expected to be clued on in every single thing going on all the time, and if you're not, that also makes you a bad person. And it's like there's so much going on, like like you were saying, back in the day you used to like worry about yourself and your neighborhood, like that was all you had the scope for, really. And obviously if you heard about something going on in this other country, it was because it was in the newspaper or it was on the radio or it was on the news on TV, like that was your level of finding stuff out. Whereas now, as you said, it's so all the time constant where like you end up being like, oh, I missed that thing. Like, especially since I'm not on Twitter, like I used to have it where I would get friends like messaging me about stuff and I'm like, huh? I don't, what's happened? Yeah, like you're going to need to like actually link me to the one you're on about here because I'm clueless. I've not touched it. Like,
I agree that. And there's another dynamic here that we're not even exploring is the fact that once upon a time, the information wasn't available to us. Then it became available. Then it became available at hyper speed. And then we started to realize it's not just information that's reaching us. It's a whole lot of misinformation. And people are like hitching their disposition on a wagon of disinformation, and they're doing it unapologetically. There's no research going on. They're just getting in and getting their claws into whatever it is that they think they're supposed to be feeling. I feel so much better when I can just stream or make a video and say, just come here. I can't solve all that's going out there. I can only be in control of what's in front of my camera. And that's why I end every stream and every video with be good to each other. Cause really at the end of the day, that's all we can do, man.
Just
be good, as in make good choices and be good to the person next to you. If we can just do that, let's just do that.
I don't think that it hit me how important, you know, making content to bring other people out of their world, out of their real life world. They want an escape, right? I didn't really think that hit me until the pandemic hit. Once the pandemic hit, I think that's when I finally had the realization that I'm not just making videos for clout, you know, and views and likes and stuff. I'm actually making videos to give people an escape because it's rough, you know, things. Yeah. It was a rough time, still is. And if I can just put something out there that's going to take them away from whatever it is they're dealing with, because everybody's dealing with something, and, you know, maybe make them smile, maybe make them laugh, maybe put them in awe of a build or learn something. Then I've done that, and I get a lot of those messages too about how things that I've done, streams, videos, whatever, have helped people get through tough times, and that's like all I need, you know. I mean, obviously, you need enough to pay the bills, but this is what really drives me, not you know, the likes or anything like that. Just knowing that we're doing something positive, we're putting positive things out into the world for people to enjoy, and that's just huge.
I think it's the type of thing
where like it's I didn't realize again probably around until the pandemic, or when like I always the pandemic I struggled with, because the the thing that always revitalizes me doing content is when I get to go to conventions and meet people. Like, getting to meet people who say, like, they love the Lightyears, they love MCC, or they love Empires. Like, hearing that feedback from an actual human being, like, re-energizes me. So, like, I used to always have it where, like, I would go to an event, come back, and I'm like, I'm ready to make content. This is great. Blah, blah, blah. Would do it for several months. And obviously, like everything creative, you eventually get a bit burnout when you're doing the same thing. And it would always then spike back up when I'd go to conventions. So then when the pandemic happened and I was like, uh-oh, where do I get that like feedback or that like sort of thing? And for me, it ended up becoming a lot from MCC at the time, because like I was forced to be online because that was the only way you could talk to people. And that ended up like, I didn't realize until like it sort of turned on its head where like I had built such a reliance on like the positive feedback from MCC, because back in the early days, everyone's like, we love it, it's going great. Like, it was very negative, like little negativity about it. And then obviously at one point it just flipped and it suddenly became, we couldn't do anything right. And that was like suddenly stripped away. And I was like, oh God, like I went from having this, like everyone's like, yeah, this is great, to it's not. And it was like, ah, I now need to find something where I get comfort from. For me, it's anything Drag Race related. I don't know what it is. Something to do with like drag videos, all that sort of stuff. There's like, this is just people dressing up in fun costumes and like expressing themselves. And like, it's just such a, I can just turn off from the world and just focus on it for the bit. And I like the fact that I'm that for other people with content, where like they can be like, okay, there's a lot going on, but for this hour, I can just sit and watch this stream, or this 30 minute video I can watch and just kind of evolve or be enveloped by this like video world or the Minecraft world that's kind of going on.
Absolutely. Because you mentioned that you wanted to learn more about as a youngin.
I do.
What do you got for him?
All right. Well, I guess the reason I want to do that, because I wonder, let's see. I feel like when I see characteristics in people that I enjoy, I think more often than not, it's not some new characteristic that they developed. It might be something that they've honed over time. But my point being that I think that there's been something in that person their whole life and it works in the other direction, right? I've known some pretty evil people, and mm-hmm. You come to find out that edge or that darkness in them has been there from the beginning. I think of Scott, and I talk about, and we mentioned it, but how personable you are and how I feel like I gravitate towards you in regards to that awesome mm-hmm. energy, and I just feel better around it. When you were very young, yeah. And I'm going back to like grade school, like I don't know how it was in Scotland, but first grade, second grade, I'm talking like, what is that, 8, 9 years old? What is first grade? I don't even remember. Seven? Oof. Maybe six? I have no idea. Who cares?
Yeah, probably six years old or
something
so.
Like that. Yeah. I want you to go back to your earliest memories. What was your dynamic with your friends? How, like, what did people look to Scott for? What made them come to you?
I've always been like the talkative person. Like, it was my entire, like, from, so in the UK, we'd start primary school at 5, like that's primary 1. And then you do like primary school up to primary seven, so like until you're about 11. And then you move to high school, where you then start again at 1 and work your way up through 6. And it was always like through primary school and high school, like any parents' evenings, it was always like, Scott's a lovely boy, very polite, does chat a lot though, will distract other people by also talking to them. Like, it didn't matter who you put me with, like, I would find something to talk about. Like, I will always talk with people. And it was funny that it turned from, like, what was my, like, negative in school to, like, oh, now I get paid to talk. Like, I'm just getting paid to yap. Like, I'm a yapper, that's all I'm doing is sitting in front of a camera and just speaking. And, like, it ended up, it was funny because I remember growing up, I used to have quite like a higher pitched voice. Like, I didn't hit puberty or have any of that stuff happen until like I was like 16-ish. Like, it was all late for me. And it was funny because like my voice used to be something I'd get like made fun of or teased about, kind of thing. Because obviously like having a Scottish accent in Scotland doesn't make you stand out. Like, that's not a thing. So then going to like content creation, where like the accent is the thing people love. And I'm like, yes. Great. This thing again that used to be something I get teased at is turned into like my main selling point. Like, it's a strength kind of thing here. So yeah, I used to always be the talkative one. I was always chatting with someone, didn't matter who you put me with. Like, it could be someone that, like, I used to always have it where you'd get those people in school that like they wouldn't be nice if they were with a group, but then when you got them on their own, they were fine. So it was always like, even those people, like, I wouldn't get along with if they were with a group, but if it was just me and them, like, we'd find something to chat about. Like, we were fine.
That's awesome. So did you have like brothers and sisters, or are you only child?
Yeah, so I have one full sister who I grew up with, my sister Evelyn. She's 4 years older. We always were very, very close. It was always something where, like, my mum used to, like, my mum's friends would always be complaining about their kids arguing or not getting on. And my mum was like, could be me. Like, I remember one time, like, I started crying, getting upset at my mum because she was grounding my sister. And I was like, no, don't, like, she Aww. Didn't mean it. Like, I remember, like, and she didn't get grounded because of me. Like,
oh, wow.
The favor was never returned. That was not a return wave. But it was a thing with, like, me and my sister have always been very close, and still to this day we are, kind of thing. And then I have 3 half siblings because my dad was married before my mum.
Mm-hmm.
But again, having slightly older parents means that, like, they are all adults with, like, their own families and their own kids. Like, I think I'm an uncle to about, like, 12 children, 13 children now, maybe. I don't remember. There was many of them, and one of them's older than me.
I was just gonna ask you
that. Explain.
Yeah.
I've got one nephew who is, like, 2 years older than me, so that was always fun to explain when you're, like, kids, because I'd be like, they're like, oh, your cousins. I'm like, no, I'm his uncle. Like, it's like, yeah, I'm uncle Scott. I'm not his cousin. Like, it was always a funny thing to, like, experience. So, like, those, they became, like, the fun siblings we'd go and stay with for, like, a week during the summer or that sort of thing, because my dad is English, so they live down here, whereas we lived up in Scotland, kind of thing, with my mum and my dad, kind of thing. And then my mum's side of the family were up there. But yeah, it was always it was fun growing up with, like, a sister.
And were you, so you said you were pretty talkative as a young one. Did that carry out through high school? Just that same persona?
Yeah. Yeah. It's never really stopped.
Yeah.
It used to always be the, like, I was the factor of, like, if my mum or that ever met someone who talked more than me, like, I was the thing of, like, he speaks more than Scott does. Like, it's like, even now, like, I'll have it where, like, if I've had, like, a tradesperson in to, like, decorate or something, and, like, they happen to just be a talker, like, if I'm saying, like, he just wouldn't let me go. Like, he just kept talking. Like, you know, it's a level of, like, oh, he must have been talking a lot if I thought there was a lot.
That's awesome.
So you said that it wasn't until you started getting into being a YouTube creator full time that you decided to move to England. How hard was that decision? What's that been like, that transition from one country to another?
For me, it was almost one of those situations where, like, it just kind of made sense. Like, I obviously, at the time, I used to travel all the way down from Scotland to Sheffield, which is, like, 4 hours on the train, to visit, like, Lizzie and Joel and that friend group. And we'd go over, like, maybe, like, 5 times a year for, like, going on, like, a group trip or a barbecue or this sort of thing. We'd hang out. And it was obviously, I decided, I was like, okay, I'm going to stop uni now, like, get my bachelor's degree and then call it there and just work in content. And I remember I was down visiting, like, Lizzie, and she was like, why don't you just move here? And I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like, moving here, because I'm spending so much on train tickets every few months to come and visit. And, like, I'm going to be doing that even more so now that I have the free time. I'm not relying on, like, uni holidays matching up, kind of thing. And, like, obviously with the way the UK is set up, like, moving to Scotland and England is, like, just like moving down the road. There's no passports or visas or, like, applications that go through, especially also because, like, I'm half English, so, like, my dad was born in England and raised, my mum was Scottish, so, like, I kind of fit in the middle. It was more so just then, like, going back from this trip, like, mum, I've come up with the best idea ever, I'm gonna move down south. And mum was like, what? Like, not impressed whatsoever. And I think it was just because she kind of went from having 2 kids in the house, and then suddenly, like, within 2 years my sister moved out and then I was moving out, and it just suddenly, I was also the youngest as well, so it was, I think she was kind of having that, like, all the birds are leaving the nest kind of too soon moment of, like, uh-oh. But I think, like, obviously, even now that, like, we always talk about it now, and, like, it just made sense at the time to move down. Like, I moved down to Sheffield, lived there for 4 years, 5 years, I think it was. 5 years. And I did the whole pandemic, like, alone. Like, I used to live in the house myself, kind of thing. And it was funny because I lived, like, across the road from Lizzie and Joel, to the extent where, like, from my office window I could see their front door, like, that it was literally 10 seconds, like, and not exaggerating levels. But it was hard during the pandemic because, like, they were so close but we weren't allowed to interact, kind of thing. And that sort of realization kind of after the pandemic, when stuff could go back to somewhat normality, I was like, I need to be around more people all the time. At the moment, I kind of went from being quite I was always quite introverted, or I always say I'm an introvert pretending to be an extrovert, is how I would describe it, where, like, if you meet me at a convention, I'm going to chat away fine. Like, I'll mess around with people, I'll hang out. Like, I'm pretty good at just like building off with vibes, but like, I have like the social battery, and like the more I'm doing that, the quicker it drains. And it then means when I come back from conventions, I'm like, no one speak to me, no one reach out to me, no one touch me for a week. Like, I need to just exist in my own space and like just sit in my office, like in the dark, just watching Drag Race or a TV show or making a video. Like, I need to just not have human contact for a bit to like build it back up. And I think the pandemic changed that slightly, where I suddenly was like, I want to have access to more friends, because back in Sheffield, it was pretty much like Lizzie, Joel, Ollie, and myself at the time. And it was kind of like, if Lizzie and Joel were obviously being a happy couple, it was like, they would be like, oh, we're doing date night, we're doing this thing. And it was like, I don't always just want to be the third wheel. Like, and I don't know what to do. Like, if I want to hang out and you can't, I'm just stuck. So I ended up, after the pandemic, deciding to move down to Brighton. So I went all the way down to like the furthest point in like the UK, basically, which was again another one where I thought I'd say to my mum, like, so I'm going to move like 9 hours away actually instead of 4.
Oh my gosh. But
I ended up like, I was surprised at the time, because I remember being like, I came down to Brighton just to visit friends down here, and then being like, oh wait, actually, I could see myself living here. Like, I never thought I could, but actually, I could. And I remember calling my mum and like the drive home kind of thing. And I was like, oh yeah, like I actually was thinking like it might be an option to move, because like Lizzie and Joel were moving as well. So I didn't have them right next to me anymore. So it didn't make sense to stay where I was. And I remember at the time expecting this, like, uh-oh, like here we go. And my mum was like, you know, I think that makes sense. Like, because from her side, she had been seeing me like post Instagram stories of like going bowling with friends and doing stuff. And she's like, that's all I've ever wanted, is for you to have people and be doing things. Like, she didn't, obviously, as an older person, she doesn't understand that like a lot of our friendships can exist in a pure online space. And I'm not going to like sit with an Instagram story like on podcast with him and Skiz. Like, so it's that he was the relationships and hangouts she wasn't seeing. So she ended up seeing obviously these real life things. And in Brighton, like I have, so it became like, Brighton is kind of the little crater spot in the UK, where you've got like Aimsy and Tubbo and Tommy and myself and like Owen and Beck and all this sort of thing. Like, there's such a big group here that it's like, oh, if I want to do something, like there's going to be someone who'll want to do something. Or if I'm having a hard time or a hard day, like I know I can just call up someone and be like, can you come over? And they're like, yep, like that sort of thing. It's a very sort of nice community down here. It's just not a nice price, as it's very expensive. Sheffield was much cheaper, and I will go back eventually.
Well, when you're ready to save up some money for retirement.
Yeah.
Speaking of, I mean, I think a good question that we actually had submitted to us, before we record a podcast, we have a group of people that support us on a platform called Glimpse, and they submitted some questions. And one of them is perfect for what we're talking about. It's, what would you envision yourself doing had you not gotten into the creator space? You said you were going to school, going to uni for animation.
3D.
Do you think you would have continued that had you not started making videos? Or where do you think you would be today if you weren't on YouTube and Twitch?
I learned, like, when I was at uni, I was kind of like, I don't have the patience to be a 3D animator. Like, it's so much like repetition of like move a character, like animation, like this much frame, this much frame, this much, and it's just constant the same thing over and over, and I get quite bored of like repetition. It's like the type of games, like I get bored of platformers eventually, because I'm like, it's the same thing with a different skin slapped on it, like it's keeping on a level and jumping. And I think, like, I've had this thought before where, like, I think now I probably would do interior design. Like, I love interior design. It's a creative outlet that I've kind of been able to experience over the last few years since like moving out, where like it's not for content per se, there's no one judging it. Like, I'm just doing what I want to do in the way that I do it. And it's fun enough, it's a type of content I love to consume. Like, I watch so many home interior design channels. Like, there's a channel called like Austin Flipsters, and they buy houses in Austin, like renovate them, flip them, do this sort of stuff. There's someone called Lone Fox who does more like DIY and like how to upgrade your own home and this sort of stuff. And like, there's so much of that that like I love like interior design, to the point where like I have friends will be like, what should I do with this thing? Or like Jem, when she was painting her wall, she's like, what are these two colors? And I was like, both are fine, this one, just because it'll like match better with this and it'll make the office seem better and this sort of stuff. Like, I like the fact that I've also now kind of built up a repertoire of like people that have come to my house and seen how it is, like it to the point where they're like, okay, no, I want to know what you think I should do now. Like, and I'm like, that's where I think I would love to, if I ever had to stop YouTube now or saved up enough invention was like, okay, I'm done, I would like to probably go into interior design. Like, I'd love to do that sort of stuff.
That's awesome. My wife's an interior designer, so I know about all the
flip
shows and everything. And I do have to say, you have a lovely background behind you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Nicely curated.
I've got this was all like recent because my office used to be flipped. So like these units used to be where this wall is, and my desk was over there. And basically what it did was it kind of meant that the entire office just became a walkthrough because like I have a door at the back here. So if you wanted to go outside, you had to like walk through my office, and it meant I couldn't put anything in the middle because it was the walkway. So I almost cut the room in half by like moving these units to the middle to make like a divider. So behind there, there's like half of a room where I'm going to put like a big cuddle couch, and it'll become like a little like chill area where I can sit down and like read a book or watch a show or just get away from like, I think the longer I've done YouTube, the more I've appreciated and learned the importance of being able to like take away from the computer and like get up from your desk and leave it. Because it was when I first moved out, my very first house was just like, I shared with two friends and my office and my bedroom was in the one room. And like, I had my own bathroom as well. So I ended up like after that year, I was like, I barely like left this room. It was where I sat to watch TV shows. It was where I sat to work. It was where I played games with friends. It was where I slept. Like it became very, I was like, that's my requirement. If I ever moved out, which I did, I was like, I need to have an office. Like I need to have a separate room. I need to be able to get up, shut the door and cut it off kind of thing and be like, that's it. Like if it's getting too much or I've done a lot, I need to like be shutting that. And it's now I'll try and make an effort of like, oh, if I'm watching a TV show, could I watch it on the TV? Like I'll get up and go into the living room and sit there with my cat and just cuddle and watch TV or have a snack and like trying to get myself out into the room a bit more. So that was why I kind of changed all this up. And then this here, which is my like collage wall, you're not going to see it too well. If I turn on a light, you might see it a bit better.
Yeah.
So see the gold up there.
But that's all different art from different series that I've done. So like this big one here is the Life series. You two are in this one.
Oh, wow.
What? Yeah. So like this is Life series. This one's Empire season 2. This one's Empire's 1. This is Rats SMP. This tiny one was my Witchcraft one. This was Origins SMP. And then the four little ones at the corner are different Pirates SMP ones. Wow. I'll send you a picture off that one.
Yeah.
So you can like pop it on the screen. You can both see it after this to see where you are. But I also make a point of like when I'm doing it, I try and get different artists for all of them as well. Cause like Minecraft Space has so many good artists. Like it's insane. Like the art that people do where I'm like, we are block characters. We are pixels. How have you done this? Like,
I couldn't agree more.
I try and always make a effort of like trying to reach out to different people for my collage wall. Like I like doing that at the end of series. I'm like, get a big art piece, put it up in the gallery wall. And it's like a nice reminder of like, these are all the people I'm friends with and this project we've done. It's fun to like look back at and kind of see the scope of things. Like it's interesting also with Empires because we played more characters. Like those two characters look so different to like the Life series one where it's just like my skin in a green shirt. Like
isn't that interesting to see the different interpretations that people have? So I don't know if you've ever seen the show Bob's Burgers. It's a cartoon. I'm a huge fan of it. They had a single episode to where they had a bunch of their fans submit their own art in regards to how would you draw Bob? How would you draw Luis and stuff like that? And they picked it. If I had to guess, I think they picked like 15 different artists to animate the series. And what it meant was if it was a 25-minute episode, the first like minute and a half was one artist. And then from minute and a half to 3 minutes was another artist. And they did that whole
thing. That's cool.
And there was no transition. It was just a shift of perspective of interpretation. And it was arguably one of the most like intriguing episodes I had ever seen because they broke the fourth wall in such a big way to where I was enjoying it, but I was watching it through the eyes of the different artists that swapped every minute or so. If it's just the same artist, you lose that edge and it just becomes the characters just become your perception. But when it was each different one, it was so fascinating. And you talk about all the different Minecraft artists that are out there. when the people's interpretation of Skiz has just blown my mind. And it's so funny because, I mean, once upon a time I used to be in really good shape, but my wife sees the stuff and she's like, your fans think you're in a lot better shape than you were in. Because they make me into like,
honestly, main chair.
Right? He's lucky most of the artists draw me as fat. So like, I mean, yes, I am overweight, but come on, at least can we pretend, you know?
Yeah,
he's looking. Am I fat in that picture?
No, you're not. You're fine. You're good. Yeah, it's like you were saying. Like, I always love seeing how different people interpret. Like, you get some people where like you go into like a Minecraft skin, you're like, this is how I want to do it, and obviously like, we're stuck to like pixels kind of thing. So some things don't translate as well as you want. But when an artist picks up on the fact that like, oh, this was meant to be like my life series thing, I remember. Season one, I added these little, like, were maybe almost like little blaze rod things that went around my head, like floating crown kind of thing. And it's just because I was like, I need something different in between these lives. And I remember, like, artists picked it up and, like, ran with it and, like, they made it this cool thing. And, like, the way they interpret, like, the Mean Girl skin from when I did, like, the half fish thing, and I got more fishy as every time I died. And, like, the level of detail that they come up with and tweak things, and you're like, this is so cool. Like, there's so many amazing artists, like, I've used for tons of different stuff. I said all those are different, and it's just so nice to like watch and appreciate. Like, it's the same as the sort of thing where like I also try and get to different artists because I'm like, I'm happy to pay whatever, like, because these PCs all cost quite a lot, because obviously you've got like 14 plus people in each one, so like they'll be like, I hope this isn't too much, and I'm like, I'll pay you what you need, like, just I want you and the work you're doing, because I love how you conceptualize these things, which is really fun.
What a great idea.
It's kind of humbling, like, to see how talented all these artists are that make fan art, because it's like I see that skill and I'm like, I know I could never ever, like, if I spent every waking minute practicing the art of drawing or painting, I wouldn't be able to. I don't have it in me. And at the same time, I'm like, I don't know if I'm that skilled at anything I do. You know what I mean? Like, they just have this, like, such high level of...
Well, you're just blind to it. That's all. You're so... The things that you're good at, there's so very many of them. And you're so good at it that it's like walking to you. So you just don't get it. I think they feel the same way. I was going to say,
I can guarantee that almost every single one of these artists at one point has tweeted something like, oh, I can't draw, or I hate this drawing, or this sort of thing. Like,
yeah.
I think it's, yeah, you're always your like worst critic with just anything in life. Like, you tend to look at everything because you spend the most time with yourself. You look at every little detail. Like, I always used to have it, I remember, where like I'd be so self-conscious of like my acne and things that would happen. Like, it's not something I can control. Like, but I would like edit it out of photos and things and this sort of stuff. And it was like, I'm more aware of like these tiny little blemishes and mistakes than anyone. No one else is looking at my face and zooming in. Like, was there a spot there? Like, it just is sort of a thing where like, yeah, you're saying, I'll say, oh, I'm not as talented at that. But like, there's so many people who can't like do what you do with content creation. Like, I think it's also the thing of people, I think there's that sort of like thrown around where like content creation is easy. Like, anyone could do that. Like, it's so simple, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, there's so much behind the scenes and like being able to sit and hold a conversation. Like, I've done, especially back when I was like a smaller creator, like there was people who would try it, weren't built for it, and then would leave kind of thing. And I think you can tell those people, same as like, not every, like, everyone can sing, but everyone should, like, and not everyone can, like, and that's coming from me. Like, I sing when I definitely shouldn't be, like, it's the same as like, I know people who just can't cook, like, but it's also the sort of thing where like, in the entire human history, like, we were never all meant to be able to do everything.
That's right. It's
what makes everyone different. Is like, it used to, back in the day, you would have people whose specifically jobs was to hunt and gather, or to cook, like, or people whose jobs was to make things. Like, you were never expected to be a jack of all trades, master of all type thing. It was very much like, yeah, you take people who like maybe Olympic athletes, but they couldn't play Minecraft. Like, it's that sort of trade-off. Like, you've got to, everyone has something that they can be good at. It's just finding what that one is.
Yeah, absolutely. That's and what's interesting, that the worst part about the whole drawing and painting thing is that ever since I was a kid, I always wanted to be good at it, because I just admire that skill set so much. And I expressed myself visually. So I was in photography for a while, And I got a ton of accolades at my, because I, when they asked everybody, what kind of photography do you want to do? The answers were typically, I'd like to do like, you know, love, or I'd like to do nature. And I, when they got to me, I said, I'd like to do metaphorical. I like it when a picture means many different things based on your angles and what you focused on and this and that. And so that's what I did. So I did a lot of stuff with the camera that was very well received. But I had the vision and the camera could pull it off for me. When I have to have my brain send a signal to my hand and a pencil, I go full moron. Like, it doesn't matter how easy I cannot draw a human face and it make any sort of sense. And I know what I want it to look. I can see it. I can look at Scott right now. I can close my eyes and I know exactly what you look like. If I tried to draw it, you'd be like, what is that? I just can't do it. And that translates, unfortunately, into the world of Minecraft for me. It's because when I have like these visions of what I want to happen, when it's time for the rubber to hit the road, I'm like, I don't actually know how to, I don't know. You know what I mean?
I will say translating real life stuff or ideas into Minecraft is a very hard thing to do. Like, Minecraft is so, like, to get detail or the way you have in your head, like, you then need to increase the scale and it starts getting to a point where it's like exponentially and you're like, right, where's the limit? Like, where's the sacrifice this detail so that I can actually make it kind of thing?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't beat yourself up too much. I think translating art into Minecraft can be really difficult as well. I think, like, I understand. I was talking about this fun enough today with a friend where, like, I did art in school and it ended up being the only, like, A I ever got in high school. But it was a subject that I wasn't meant to take. It basically worked out, like, the way high school works is, like, or here anyways, like, after your third, you do, in first year, you kind of just get told this is what classes you're doing. Second year, you do the same. And at the end, they're like, hey, going into your next 2 years, you get to pick your subjects. Like, you have to do maths and English and A science, but it's up to you which one you do. So I did that for third and fourth. And then going into my fifth year, they were like, here's like this timetable, like pick your things. And it ended up the way the tight system had worked out that like every course I'd done in third and fourth year fit in like the Monday through Thursday slots. And Friday was just open. Like, there was nothing I'd had any experience in. And I remember at the time just being like, I guess I'll do art. Like, my sister used to be good at it. Like, so I never really bothered trying because it was always like, when you have an older sibling, people will compare you. So I was like, I'm not going to bother with that one kind of thing. And I ended up doing art and I enjoyed it. Like, I think because there was no expectations from me and there was no past things, I was able to just express that. And it's funny because like now I don't think I could pick up a pencil and paper and draw it, but I love drawing on my digital drawing. I love being able, like, I think something about if you make a mistake with digital drawing, it's so easy to undo. Like, control Z, done. Like, it's gone. It never happened. And it's easier to like, oh, you liked the curve of the line, but you don't like where it is, so you can move it kind of thing. My thing with drawing is, like, I go through, like, art fatigue, where, like, suddenly I'll get inspiration. I'm like, I'm going to do art, and I start drawing again, and I do, like, little bits, and it starts doing well, and then I almost get, like, burnt out and fatigued from it, so I put it down, and then I leave it for so long that when I pick it back up, I'm, like, starting from scratch again, like, learning how to draw, and then, like, I do that and get frustrated, give up, and it's just this cycle. So it's always whenever someone does like fan art and like people come up to events and are like, I drew this for you, or people tweet like, I did this thing. It's always wild to me because I'm like, I know how long that would have taken you. And the fact that you've dedicated that much of your free time to be like, I want to do this for you. You're like, why? Why would you spend that much time for me? Like, what?
That's amazing. And have you ever used art to like design Minecraft stuff? Like, oh, I'm going to draw it out on my drawing pad and then go try to build it in Minecraft.
I've done it before in the past it's more for like, I'd say area planning. Like, see if I'm like, okay, I know I've got a big area. Cause what I used to always in the way I think I'm kind of doing slightly differently with like Minecraft SOS as I have with other series is like, I would tend to be like, okay, I'm going to have a house, a barn, a windmill, this building, blah, blah, blah. And then I'd like place them all in Minecraft. And then suddenly it's just like building so much space. And like, I would have to use kind of like, I'd draw things out in my art and be like, okay, I'm going to put a path here to try and fill up the spots. And that's sort of what I'm doing different with SOS is I'm like doing all the terraforming and that as I go, like I'm building custom trees as I go rather than just adding them into fill spots. So yeah, I've done that before with like planning bases out or like, it's also like what's the advantage of Lightmatica. Like it's kind of saved me doing that in drawing form because I can just build it Creative World and then play around with where I'm going to put the schematic and then do it. Like, it saves a lot of time from that. But I use the drawing tablet a lot for D&D stuff. I'll use it if I'm like needing to sketch up like a battle map to try and figure out where things would go. Or I'll use it for like the thing I always get end up is anytime my mum or my sister will be like, hey, could you cut out this person from this photo, or could you like edit the trash out of this thing? And I'm like, right, you do it once and it was a mistake. Like I'm now the resident Photoshop expert. So sometimes it's easier with like my iPad, where like I'll take it in, like if there's a bit where I just can't get it to look right with like copying and pasting or using a race tool, like I'll take it into my iPad and Procreate and then just like color match and like draw in kind of thing, because when it's zoomed out you don't notice it. Fun enough, one of my merch images for my last drop I did with Shelby, we're stood in front of two houses that like were perfect colors to match it, and I remember at the time being like, the houses look great but the street doesn't, and it like where it meets it was all messy, and I remember I just sat for about an hour in the living room with my iPad. It was just like zoomed so far in, just like drawing thin lines to kind of like blend it all a bit better. And it just like, you wouldn't tell it was done, but that's where I think my skills more come from. I've always been better at that type of stuff. It was what you're saying, if I didn't do interior design, like at uni I learned I didn't have the patience for 3D animation, but I loved like coming up with concept designs, like concept art stuff. It used to be, it was such a weird one where I was like, in my head, a really fun job would be working at Fortnite and doing skins, because they're always so weird and so random and so like out there and so well done. And I was like, that must be such a fun concept art where like job where you just come up with like 50 of the, you're like, this one's a banana, like, or this one's a fish but he's got a bowl in his head, like, and I'd be like, what ones do we make? Like, I think that would be really fun. So that's the type of stuff I've always liked doing, is like concept arty bits.
That's cool. I didn't know you were into drawing. Is there any other hobbies that people don't necessarily know that you have?
I like cooking. If I'm like, it's sort of like, I liked cooking more when I wasn't living alone. Like, I think when you're younger living at home, like cooking's a fun thing. Like, I'll cook dinner tonight, guys. I've got this, I've seen this recipe I want to do. But then when you're an adult, you realize that life, like, now until the day I die, is just a perpetual cycle of, what am I going to make tonight?
Yeah.
What am I going to make tomorrow?
It's exhausting.
What am I going to make the next day? Like, it just becomes... I've been using HelloFresh for the last like 5-6 years because I'm like, this is great. I pick them like months in advance and it just shows up. And I'm like, I live alone anyway, so 3 meals does me 6 days. I'm like, great, I only need to decide one. Like, I think other sort of hobbies, I'd say, it's like, I do art off and on. Interior design's probably the big one of like, I enjoy that type of doing. Like right now, my house, I'd say this year, so far it's just been one project into another. Like this room, obviously I changed my dining room, I like repainted and got wallpapered, bought new furniture. The guest bedroom, I did that too. The bathroom, currently I'm getting like one of my bathrooms fully gutted and renovated, because like I'm just constantly like, okay, I need to change this thing or do that thing. And it's mainly because also the start of the year is quite quiet for me. Like I tend to be, I'd say January through to about April, like I'm at home, and then May to about October, I'm constantly traveling for events and things. I'm like, I don't have time to do these renovations or changes, so I'll do it now. But I'd say that's the main hobbies. I don't have any other fun secret crafts I can think of.
I was gonna say, like, you put out a lot of content, you know, between the videos that you make and all the streams that you do. So it's like, do you find it hard to even find time for these hobbies?
Yeah,
I think like for me, one thing is like, I'd say one thing I would love to still somehow be in, which I'm not, is like musical theater stuff. Like I love musical theater. I think I sing, whether I'm meant to or not, don't know. But I've always loved that type of content. I love going to shows and such. And it's a thing I'm able to, what I've kind of done is like my streams are very like singing focused. Like I'd say if you click onto my stream, there's a 50-50 chance if I'm either singing musical numbers or I'm just playing the game. Like you don't know what you're going to get. And I've kind of built that audience that like enjoys that now. Like you kind of build the audience for the content you put out there. Because it's like, if people don't like my singing, they don't watch. If they do, they're watching. Like that's the sort of trade-off there. So I think that's where it's like, I would love to, but because I don't have the time necessarily, I'm able to kind of get that fix within streaming. Because I've thought before of like, oh, do I try and find like a local musical theater place that's doing stuff that I could like jump on and like get involved. But then I'm also thinking to myself, I'm like, then there's rehearsals, and then like however long the show runs for, and I'm like, does that clash with an event I'm meant to go to? Like,
yeah,
there's so many like hoops, and I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can do that. Like, also, I'm scared of rejection, so if I go in audition and they say no, I'd be like, okay, I'll just off myself then.
Yeah, it's we find a way to just like stay really busy. I like what you said before though about like having that space that you're gonna put behind that wall behind you, and being able to just kind of like retreat there. It's something that you know, through the 87, 88 episodes of this podcast, that's something that comes up over and over again, is how we don't give ourselves enough time to just stop working and let the brain relax and let the battery recharge, whether it's social or otherwise. And I literally have to force myself, like I had to write it into my schedule, go sit on the couch, like this couch that we're sitting on, go sit on this couch for 10 minutes and just do nothing but just relax. And that's when I find like the ideas about what I'm going to do next episode or what I want to do for any kind of content creation. Those usually come from that time, because it's like finally I allow my brain to wander, you know, instead of just focusing on a task at hand, which is what we tend to do when we sit down in front of our computer. And so, yeah, I think that's super important to be able to either spend time doing hobbies or just give yourself some time to just relax your brain. As a content creator, it's kind of like our job to continue to come up with ideas, right?
I've always said that, like, with content creation, I was like, I'm both never working and always working. Yeah. Like, it's a type of job where it's like, if I want to go on a trip or a convention or go to like, I went to IKEA yesterday, like, I can just be like, okay, I'm going to go. Like, you've got that flexibility. But also at the same time, like when I'm on these trips or on these vacations, like your brain's constantly like, okay, what video can I do? Should I post this to Instagram? Like, I've got, you constantly think of ideas. Like, most of my ideas are stuff come to me like when I'm in the shower or as I'm like dozing off to bed, suddenly I'll be like, oh, okay, like trying to get my phone to like type down a notes app or record to be like, hide and seek video, like idea, like, okay, cool. And then go back to sleep. Like, it's, I always describe it as always working and never working at the same time. Like, you're just constantly, it's the same as like, especially with being a UK based creator, is like, my sleep schedule is quite, I sleep in until about like 11 in the morning. And I stay up until like 2, because me being up at like, I've not recently because the bathroom's been going on, I've been up at 8 a.m. every morning, like, huh? But it doesn't make sense for me really to be up early, because all the people I interact with are Americans like yourselves who are asleep. So like, me being up and having these extra hours does nothing. Like, I can't record with anyone, I can't do bits. So you kind of adapt, and you're, I said, I'm always then working, I have to be flexible, so it can be like 11 p.m. at night, but someone DMs me, they're like, oh, can I get a clip on this server or something about MCC, and I'm like, right, okay, I need to respond to this. Like, I need to be able to be quick responsive as well at all times.
Because of that, you kind of feel like you're never fully disconnected, right?
Yeah,
because you're constantly like at the ready, you know.
Yeah, you're just always on.
Yeah, exactly.
I just was just on a cruise, and the cruise ship that we were on was just incredible, and I did find myself looking for any opportunity to take a picture or a quick video that I knew I was going to work into my show and tell return stream. I knew it was going to be a big stream, and I really like to come back when I'm gone for a while. I like to bring a lot of supplemental material for my audience. And I was like, there was a part where just the internal balcony to the elevators was just so mesmerizing because it was such a big cruise ship. So I took some time to film this actual dynamic and the way I came over the railing and all that. And I did this, like, I'm doing this for the stream. I will use this later. And I did. And I also was in, there was an incredible memorial to the Holocaust. And it was one of the most impactful designs I'd ever seen. And it was kind of weird because you really should be, you know, you want to be quiet and solemn around it, you know, and everybody was respectful. And typically in situations like that, you know, I don't like to do pictures or videos or stuff like that. But this, to me, I was like, I'm going to film this because I want this to, I want my audience to see this. And what it is you start with, you know, everybody who was in the concentration camps got a little tattoo of a number on their wrist. We know that. And I started on one. It was a pane of glass, and it was one of the numbers was etched into it. And then I pulled back. It revealed more. And it revealed so many. All you saw was this blur mesh because there were so many. Then I panned up and you realized, wow, you're actually in a cube. So there's this pane of glass all around you and it goes up about 40 feet because there's so many. Mm-hmm. And then I took the audience on a journey. There were six of those towers. Each one had a million, you know, numbers on it. And I did this and I wanted to do it as respectfully as possible. But like you just said, here I am in this moment. And I was just like, I want to bring this back to my audience. And so I'm still working. I'm always working. You're always working. B-Dub said the same thing. You can do everything that you want. When you're a content creator, your ability to provide is 24/7. And it doesn't have to be at your desk or in front of a camera. Whenever you're elsewhere, you're just the brain's always there. You know, and I think that the key is to recognize when the inverse has happened, when you are actually at the desk, but you're not there. That's the moment you want to get up and walk away because you know what I mean? Now you're starting to associate that area with discomfort. This is what I have to exit my office a lot during the day.
I was going to say, I suppose like you two will have it more like I always just had part-time jobs before content creation. But like, do you find that you miss the times where like you kind of had like a normal job and it was like you worked these hours and then when you came home that was it, like you were then like I can spend time with my family or I can play this game or watch this movie or like it was you time kind of thing, you didn't think about work outside of work most of the time?
I do that being able to just say that part of my day is done and I can shut it completely off and now just I'm 100% present for my family and everything else. It's been a while since I've felt that. And so, I'll miss that from time to time for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I'm still in it, right? I still work a full-time job. So trying to manage it all is interesting, but I'll tell you my position on that is back like way before the YouTube stuff. And there was go to work and the come home from work. I will say this, all the jobs I had and even up leading into when I got into my career, if I was never a card puncher, a time clock puncher by nature. So I and when you're a kid, you have to punch a clock. I worked at Costco for 7 years, right?
Yeah.
But when I got into my career, I remember being like, this is still not, that's not my vibe. I want to desperately care about the work I'm doing. So I was a part of big programs that I did carry with me. I would look for inspiration in the things that I was doing outside of work. And one of them, like one of the biggest things I did was because I saw a telemedicine card and I'm like, oh, I can get that to work for our business. And I worked with vendors. And so my brain was doing it. I wanted to be a part of that. The turmoil I find myself in now is that I only care about content creation. So my other job, I'm just like, I am so struggling to care. I am so struggling. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm still doing a great job, but I'm just so now it's this whole nother level of turmoil. I am so struggling to care at all. But when it's the content creation world, it's like, I just can't stop thinking about it.
Yeah. You're more at your other job still thinking about content creation.
That's correct. That is correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, look at the time again. I don't know how this happens. Another
nearly 2 hours.
Maybe it's because Scott has the gift of gab, but this has been absolutely incredible getting a chance to know you and, we will make sure to put some links so people can check out your content on both YouTube and Twitch. If everybody's, you guys now know what he's about. He's told all the different S&Ps and different things he does on. You can listen to him sing on Twitch. So there's that.
It's either a pro or a con depending on what you think of my singing ability.
So it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we've got a chance to obviously hang out and stuff with the Life series and briefly saw each other at TwitchCon. We'll have to have more events
feel what it's like to hug me. I am the world's greatest hugger, but apparently I'm second place.
It was my favorite thing, like that entire vlog, and it was the one segment of like being like, Scott's actually the best hugger. You being like, I hate it because you're right. Yeah. I was like, yay. I was like, okay, good. I am it's always the thing that I always got told, like I'm such a physical touch person. So like you saying that was just ticking all of my dopamine hits. I was like, yep, this is great. Like
Yeah,
it just sitting kicking my feet like, this is great.
Yeah, yeah, it was great. We need more of that. We definitely need more of that.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
thank you so much for spending the last almost 3 hours with us. So
yeah,
appreciate you. I've had a blast.
It hasn't felt like 3 hours. So thank you so much for having me as well. I'm glad we finally got to do it after. It was that one time in stream where I was like, so when are you inviting me? And you were like, oh, I just didn't want to bother you. And I was like, no, I want to do it, please.
Yeah, yeah, no, thank you. Thank you. Because like we had already discussed inviting you and it was just like that reminder, like, oh yeah, like we've been meaning to do this. Thank you.
Yeah. The timing was great. It's been great. Thanks for giving us your time. Thanks for being on the show. You've been obviously such a delight. And I don't know what our next project is together, but I can tell you I'm sure as hell looking forward to it, man.
Yeah. I always, anytime I get to do anything with you two, I'm always like, yay, this is great. Like anytime I'm getting to do more with anyone, I'm like, this is fun. That's what I do it for, is like making friends and meeting people. So it always helps.
Yeah. And it's just been an absolute pleasure. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, thanks again for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you, man.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.